Hello, and welcome to another fact-filled NABBW teleseminar on a topic of a huge amount of interest to baby boomer women and their families. In a moment, I will introduce our guest expert, Pamela Sams, CRPC, which stands for Certified Retirement Planning Counselor, and Pam is NABBW's retirement planning expert. So she and I are going to start with a discussion on life after work, healthcare, and retirement, and then after we've discussed for a while, I'll open the call and make it possible for those who are listening to ask questions. But before I do that, let me introduce myself, and then I'll tell you a little bit more about Pam, and then we'll get on with the rest of our mission for the night. My name is Ann Holmes. I'm the Boomer in Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at www.nabbw.com, and we have a forum which is found at, it's called Boomer Women Speak, so it has an easy email address, www.boomerwomenspeak.com. Our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords baby boomer women. This call is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. As you know, this live call is free and available to the public, but we also record the calls and have a collection of over 90 past teleseminars available free to our gold level membership. And those are in the private area of the website, so they're not visible if you're just on the public part of the site. Now, as to the format of tonight's call, as I said already, we'll be talking first and then asking questions, but get yourself comfortable. Make sure you have paper and pen, because I'm sure there's going to be some things here that Pam is going to tell us about that I'm going to want to take notes on, and you probably will too. So for the next 45 minutes, I'll have the phone lines muted, and we'll be discussing healthcare and retirement, and then I will open the lines, as I said, and we'll see what kind of questions you have to throw at Pam and what she can come up with for answers. That said, let me introduce our guest, Pamela J. Sams, CRPC. Pam Sam has spent the past 11 years helping women and their families improve their personal and financial wealth through solid financial planning. She is the president of Jackson Sams Financial Services, a financial planning and wealth management firm located in Herndon, Virginia, near the Dulles Corridor. There, she focuses on helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by placing their needs first. She firmly believes in sound investment management and that it starts with understanding each woman's goals. And that's why she insists that before investment decisions can be made, her clients need to work through the steps needed to develop their own financial plan. Pam is a graduate of the University of Missouri Columbia and holds a degree in financial management from Everett University. She's earned several client planning awards and successfully earned her CRPC, which stands for Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor certification, through the College of Financial Planning. In the past, Pam and I have talked about how to create retirement income and how couples are retirement challenged because they're not communicating clearly about their retirement goals and strategies, even as they get closer and closer to retirement age. So this call is along the same lines, talking about healthcare and retirement. I think that too many of us have no idea of what the implications are of Medicare, and I think too many people think that Medicare takes care of a lot more than I believe it actually does. So we'll hope that Pam can get things clear for us on that. Therefore, I guess I'll have one thing to say to Pam before I introduce you, and that is that I just read that there's a new report from Fidelity about saying that a 65-year-old couple that plans to retire in 2012 needs an additional $240,000 to cover out-of-pocket costs that are not covered by Medicare. And, of course, they're saying that this is 4% up from last year's estimate. But I didn't know if that's a lifetime number of $240,000. I hope that's lifetime and not annual, because if it's annual, it seems like outrageously amount of money. But I'll let you say hello to people and maybe comment on that.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me again, Anne. These discussions are definitely very important to women as they plan for retirement, and really just going through some of the segments of healthcare is definitely one of those that pop up all the time in my practice. And that's a perfect segue that you had mentioned. I was also going to start out with that fidelity study as well. That is $240,000. That is a lifetime. So it's figuring it's a couple of 65 years old for probably over a 20 to 30 year retirement would probably spend out of pocket, not including what the government would cover under Medicare and other programs, about $240,000. And that's basically something that you need to set aside in addition to just your regular living expenses that you would have in retirement that we covered during the last phone call.
Mm-hmm.
So that really is quite a startling number that people say, you know, it's like, okay, I have this amount that, you know, maybe $1 million or $1.5 million that I have to have for living expenses, and now you're telling me I have to have another $240,000 just for health care. So it's really quite a number, quite a challenge for people. But that's basically the reality that we're dealing with in terms of additional retirement planning that people need to cover.
Mm-hmm. And I would think that although that article that you and I both read from Fidelity seemed to say that the number has gone up and down, it seems like with inflation and the fact that I don't think our healthcare benefits are keeping up with inflation, I would think that if a person is not 65 today, that number might be closer to $250,000 before we get to retirement.
Exactly, Anne, and that number is definitely inflated, and actually the last number that I saw was probably somewhere between 4-6% as an inflation just on healthcare expenses. So over time,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that number will be, you know, like you said, if you're 65 today, that number will creep up over time as you continue to go towards retirement. So you do have to make sure that you have something set aside for additional expenses for healthcare.
All right. Well, I think that's given us a little bit of a start to one of my first questions, to the answer to one of my first questions, which was going to be, why is it important to focus on future health care expenses? But I'm sure you have more to say about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's definitely important to focus on the future health care expenses. I mean, longevity has become quite an issue. People are living longer these days just due to medical advances. So longevity has become, like I said, quite an issue, and especially for women, because women statistically live about 5 years longer than men. So we're actually going to have somebody to take care of us in addition to planning for our own health care expenses. So it's really important to make sure you understand, you know, that there's going to be longevity in your retirement, and there's greater risk of experiencing health care challenges or challenges with your health as you get older, and especially if women are going to outlive men by 5 years. So really anticipating and focusing in on what healthcare expenses may look like in retirement is a good place to start in terms of the importance of doing your overall retirement planning, making sure you carve out a piece specifically for future healthcare expenses.
Okay. Well, carving it out, that's a good way to look at it, but I guess I'd start with making it a little bit more simple. How should I budget for health care costs in retirement? What would be advice that you would give to me if I was coming to you and saying, Pam, I'm just not sure where I'm going to come up with that money right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do understand that. So that is, like I said, such a daunting number to look at in addition to your regular retirement. But if you're looking at how much you should budget, looking at that particular study that Fidelity did at 240, really figured out how do I put aside additional resources for that. So putting the next step we'll probably talk about is a little bit about healthcare savings accounts, putting some money away for future for current as well as future healthcare costs in a specific account that's basically earmarked for healthcare savings. You can do that as well. or to start a little side account and say, okay, these expenses are going to be for healthcare costs and retirement. Some people don't use all of their discretionary income or discretionary spending. You can basically carve out a slice of that and also put it into an account that will grow with, of course, interest-bearing account that will outpace inflation that you can use for healthcare expenses as well. So there's a variety of different vehicles that you can use in order to account for some of those healthcare costs as well. And, you know, looking at, you know, part of what you do with your overall retirement plan with your 401ks and IRAs, of course, that's going to be a pool of dollars that you would use, just making sure some of that is allocated towards healthcare costs in retirement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now that we've decided that we're going to carve out a portion out of our income right now and start saving,
mm-hmm.
you mentioned healthcare savings accounts, but would there be any other – is that the best resource? Is that the only resource? Are there other places that we could put our healthcare savings that are worth considering, or would you really encourage people to stick to a healthcare savings account since that's really what it's meant for?
Well, I would probably encourage people to stick with those particular accounts because they do give you a tax benefit with that. Healthcare savings accounts work similar to a 401k plan where you carve out a portion of the dollars and come out tax-free, pre-tax, and you put
mm-hmm.
it into a health savings account so you can continue to grow it that way. And get a tax benefit for it. There's other ways that you can definitely invest in, let's say mutual funds or a side account to earmark it for healthcare savings, but it doesn't have such the impact or the tax savings benefits that a health savings account would offer for you as well. Now, there are some caveats to healthcare savings accounts that I should mention. Most of them are either carried through employers, but they are in addition to the healthcare plan. You do have to have what they call a high deductible
mm-hmm.
plan in addition with the healthcare savings. So it's kind of partnered together. So you do have to look at the impact of what a high deductible plan would do. You know, basically you're paying a little bit higher deductible and also a larger out-of-pocket maximum for you and your family. If the trade-off is better for you to stick dollars into that healthcare savings account and use a high deductible plan, you may want to do that as well, but definitely make sure it's best for you and your family if you're taking a look at it. If you have current healthcare costs right now, possibly a high deductible plan may not be beneficial. So definitely take a look at that before you invest in a healthcare savings plan just to make sure it's the best for you and your family.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly something to consider. I know that this past year when I'm the one in our company that makes the decisions about what kind of company healthcare program that we have, and this we have it's kind of a cafeteria thing. We have two different levels of program for our staff to choose between. This past year, my husband picked one and I picked the other one, and I picked the one with the higher deductible. It's not up as high as the $1,500 or something that goes when you have the healthcare savings account, but it's definitely much higher than his deductible. And even as we're getting to the end of the year, he's asking me, "Why did you do that? Why did you go for that higher deductible? Because now we keep still having to pay here at the end of the year."
Yeah, exactly. And that's definitely, like I said, one of the caveats that you do have to make sure is that if your expenses are not going to exceed what the high deductible would be. Would it be worth it? Because you're basically paying out of pocket and not having
mm-hmm.
any of the health benefits kick in for you because you don't
right.
need those.
Right.
So that's why I said it's basically a trade-off of kind of current healthcare savings along with future healthcare savings
mm-hmm.
because these health savings accounts will allow you to do more of a rollover type situation. You don't have to use it or lose it like some of the other medical savings accounts plans that employers offer. Those are basically setting aside healthcare dollars for current use. use it up or you lose it for next year, the health savings accounts basically allow you to roll those over, and a lot of people are using those in addition to cover those health care costs, some of the health care costs in retirement, and that's the way they set those up. So it's basically a trade-off of current health care benefits versus my future health care benefits.
Okay.
Yes, so that's why you have to look at that.
Now, is this something that, like in a situation where I am, where I'm still working, I can make changes to my plan on an annual basis, but once we get into a retirement, is it something that we can make changes to on an annual basis, or is it kind of pick it when we're 65 and live with it?
Yeah, it's not too much, changes after a while. I mean, it's basically what you invest and put in there and make contributions to. So there's no really tweaking. It's just basically once you get to 65, you're starting using those dollars just like you would do with an IRA or something like that. So it just becomes more of an asset piece in that instance to use for health care. If you do use it for things outside of health care, there may be some tax implications. So make sure there are qualified medical expenses and you're not just using it for, vacations or something.
Because
the IRS will find out and then, you end up paying the taxes and then you've kind of negated the whole situation. So make sure it is a health savings account specifically for qualified medical expenses.
All right. Do you have any suggestions for us on how we can keep our health care costs down once we're into retirement?
Well, I mean, that's kind of, a general statement that I'll make, but, in order to keep health care costs down, the main thing is try to stay as healthy as possible during retirement.
Okay.
And like I said, I know that's kind of hard to do sometimes, but basically watching, making sure you're exercising, you're eating healthy and things like that. Going into retirement will definitely keep some of the health care costs down. As you start to age, that's where things start to creep up, and more towards the, end of life, last 2 years of life. Actually, that's where the bulk of the expenses come from in terms of additional medical expenses is really as you age older. So if you go into retirement fairly healthy, you can definitely cut into keeping those costs low over the longer term of your retirement because, as you age, those expenses will start to get larger. And, that's where a lot of the long-term care expenses will start to creep in as well and making sure that, if you're entering a nursing home or have nursing care come to you or an assisted living facility or something like that, those are the costs that really take up the bulk of those extra out-of-pocket expenses if you don't have that particular insurance to cover that. So basically, and stay healthy.
All right. Well, I work on that, and I'm sure most people try to work on that, but then I have to say that some of us have some chronic situations that we've acquired over the years that can probably have an impact on that, such things as diabetes or
I mean, those sort of things definitely would impact the cost of that. So there's nothing you can really do about that. But basically, keeping weight down or quitting smoking or things like that will ultimately keep you more healthy. In addition to looking at some ways to do, more generic, maybe prescription drugs. A lot of times, well, it depends if they offer the generics. But prescription drugs happen to be one of the largest pieces of seniors as they retire, and retirement is keeping up with the prescription drugs because there's a lot of them that you have to start to take. So, if there's ways to cut the cost there by taking generics versus some of the brand name prescriptions, you know, keeping some of the costs down there as well, in addition to looking at premiums for some of your Medicare expenses and any of their private insurance and things like that, keeping some of those premiums low by, you know, just kind of mixing and matching and seeing what's best for you. Because statistically, I saw the last thing, about 95% of people are overpaying for Medicare coverage because they just don't know what particular program to get into. And it's because more of an education thing. They give you a small window of for seniors to sign up for Medicare between October 15th and December 7th. And that's you have to kind of digest a bunch of information, and sometimes you just end up enrolling in a particular program. It may not be custom fit for people, and then you end up paying more premium for particular programs than you really have to. So those are some of the things that will creep up in terms of cost. But so by knowing your options and knowing what's available to you and keeping those costs down and staying healthy, you can ultimately definitely keep some of the costs down in retirement for health care expenses.
All right. Excellent advice there. Let's talk a little bit about the different options that there are available for health care. I'm not sure that since I haven't reached the age where I have to know about it, I don't really know that much about Medicare, but I know that I keep hearing about this Part D, and I think that must be something that we can make selections for. So could you give us a quick primer on what the options are out there for once we're in retirement?
Yeah, I mean, if you retire after 65, Medicare would be an option for you. But definitely check with your employer as well before you retire. A lot of some of the employers are still covering some retirees in retirement and cover with the health care plan. I know a lot of government agencies continue to do so, and a lot of larger corporate firms continue to provide health care benefits for their retirees. That number is definitely going down, but it's best to check and see if there is availability for retirement health care benefits and for retirees after you leave your employer. If you do age into to Medicare, then there's, you know, basically you hear it's basically kind of the alphabet soup in terms of Medicare and your different options there. So just kind of the quick primer on that, you have your Part A and then your Part B. So your Part A coverage is basically premium-free for most retirees if you've paid into the Social Security system. So it's one of those things as your dollars, as you continue to put money in throughout your working career, you've paid into the system, you get Part A, premium-free. And then you have, and that covers hospital, and hospitalization would be your Part A. Part B is more of your doctors and to cover your doctor visits. And that's generally a premium for your Part B benefits to cover your medical care for physician services, lab tests, physical therapy, things like that. That would be anywhere between, I think, last year, 2012 was $99, and this, I believe, 2013 is about $104 for your Part B premium for that. Now, that's kind of the base number. It does depend on your adjusted gross income on what your Part B premium would be. So that's kind of the base number. But they take a look at your taxes and what it will be and then what your Part B premium would be. But you do pay a premium for Part B. So you do have Part A and Part B. That's kind of the government program that's provided for Medicare. After that, you have a Part D, which is the prescriptions. And that came into play because, like I said, a lot of seniors were complaining about just the exorbitant amount of costs for medical, for prescription drugs. So Part D came into, I think it was 2005, 2006, Part D, to cover prescription drugs. So that's the prescription drug part of that. And then you have technically what they call Part C, and the other term for Part C would be Medicare Advantage. And those are basically plans that private insurance companies would have to cover Part A, B, and D altogether. So it's kind of combined program under Part C, Medicare Advantage. It depends on, you know, what Congress comes down with. A lot of people are expecting maybe Medicare Advantage not to stay around, but as it stands, it is part of the system as Part C, Medicare Advantage. And then, of course, you have what they call the Medigap or Medicare Supplement Plan. So if you decide to stick with original Medicare, which is basically Part A and Part B, you would have to supplement. You don't have to, but it's probably best to supplement through a Medicare supplement or Medigap plan, because Medicare only covers about 80% of the expenses, and then your out-of-pocket expenses would be the 20%. So a lot of people would get a Medicare supplement or Medigap plan to cover some of those expenses, out-of-pocket expenses for that. So that's kind of generally the primer for Medicare. You have your Part A for hospitals, Part B for doctors and physicians, lab tests and things like that. Part C is a Medicare Advantage that will cover A, B, and D. And then you have just Part D, which would be prescription drugs, and then, of course, your Medicare Gap, Medicare Supplement or Medigap plan that will cover those expenses that would not be covered through original Medicare through Plan A. So that's kind of it in a nutshell in terms of the options that are available to you in retirement. But, of course, like I said, the first case would be, are you still available to partake of the private insurance through your employer insurance after you leave your employer. Some do continue to offer retiree benefits for health care, so it's best to start there first and then look at your Medicare options as well. And I would probably suggest, if you're definitely aging into Medicare at 65, make sure you visit Medicare.gov. They have a lot of information on how the program works, all of the different parts, what your options are, what the providers are, because there's, you know, a lot of different health care companies that provide Medicare Advantage plans, Med Supplement plans, and just really just make sure you do your homework. That's why I said keeping some of those healthcare costs down by knowing what programs are available to you and not overpaying for some of these carriers that may be charging a little bit higher premium than others. So really doing your homework before you enroll in a particular program.
Okay. Is it ever a situation where there would be a physician that would say, I don't take Medicare patients?
That could be the case. I mean, especially since a lot of, you may have heard, you know, in the news, or a lot of, they had cut, stipends or supplements to physicians to cover Medicare. So a lot of physicians were saying, okay, I'm not going to take Medicare anymore. So that may be something that, you know, your physician don't take Medicare anymore. So unfortunately, you would have to go out and get, you know, look at the providers that are available that, that are using and will accept Medicare, but it is definitely one of those things down the line that that may become an issue, because, like I said, through the system, a lot of the benefits for physicians to take Medicare has been cut, and, you know, doctors have to get paid somehow. So they may or may not take it. So, you know, definitely check in with your provider to see if they they will take the Medicare. And then if not, unfortunately, you may have to go with a different doctor.
All right. Are there any other options besides the government programs that we should be aware of?
Well, I mean, you have, of course, you can always go with private insurance. That's going to be quite a bit higher if you do go with your own particular plan than what you would do with the government, and then just basically shopping around for one that would be comfortable for you. But basically, if you don't do the government plan or you don't have access to, well, either you do the government plan, you may have access to either a an employer plan that will recover retirees, or you get your basically kind of get your own private insurance plan to cover your health care. So those are a few of the options. I mean, probably, you know, the broad spectrum of things, the employer plan, if you are allowed to stay with that as a retirement benefit, will probably be more cheaper than going into kind of a Medicare, because you have some of the out-of-cost expenses there, versus if you also buy a private insurance plan, that's probably going to be the most expensive option in retirement if you basically go with something that's outside of either an old employer plan or the Medicare system.
All right. Now, what if I were to say that I am going to decide that I would like to retire before age 65? Do the options that I have available to me, does this picture change if I'm in a person, I'm a person who says I'm 61 and I think I'd like to retire?
Yeah, I mean that option definitely changes. Basically, you want to, and it depends on when you retire. If you retire at 61 and you continue to do the employer plan, there may be a gap where you can do a COBRA type of insurance, where you're still technically on the employer plan, but that only lasts for about 18 months. So if you retire, you know, well in advance of 65, then the only other option would be to get a private insurance program for yourself, which, like I said, could be a little costly between age 61 and 65. But basically, you're looking at getting your own particular health insurance as well. Now, a lot of times I know, you know, if some people retire earlier and a spouse may continue to work, kind of double playing the program where you continue to be on a spouse's program and you can go ahead and retire and your spouse is still working, at least you have some type of coverage through an employer plan that may be a little cheaper than getting your own private insurance. As well. So that basically means, you know, you're retired, your spouse is still working for the next 4 years, and you're living the life or whatever, but you still have health insurance through your spouse's program. So that's another way to take care of it as well. But, you know, probably for the most part, most people would get a private insurance coverage if they retired before 65. And that's one of the other expenses. You know, if you do plan to do an early retirement, again, going back to the first question you asked me, focusing on healthcare expenses, that's a huge factor that if you do an early retirement, there are certain things you have to make sure you are, that you take care of. And one of those is basically, what are you going to do before you're eligible for Medicare? It's covering 4 years of healthcare expenses. Which would be out-of-pocket expenses, additional premiums for your individual health plan, and making sure you have that kind of pocket of money available for those 4 years before you can get into the Medicare system.
Okay. Excellent. Well, I can clearly see that you are right, that the healthier a person can stay, the better off that we're going to be when we get into this stage of retirement and dealing with health care.
Exactly. You know, in addition to, you know, the Medicare piece, is like I mentioned before, is really kind of the long-term care piece that a lot of people take, I wouldn't say take it for granted, but it's one of those extra insurances that people are like, I really don't think I'm going to need it. I don't know. It's one of those unknowns. But, you know, statistically, there will be, I think, between age 65 and, of course, you know, within a 20 to 30-year retirement, a pretty good chance that there will be some type of long-term care experience, especially, like I said, since women tend to live longer than men, they have a higher risk of needing long-term care than anyone. And basically, the over time, you know, about three 3 to 5 years of a long-term care stay somewhere in your lifetime, making sure you have access to options to cover the long-term care situation, because that can definitely eat into your retirement assets if you don't plan properly for long-term care. And, of course, a lot of times it's either transferring that risk to a third party through long-term care insurance or looking at certain particular long-term care riders that may be on other life insurance or annuity-type products as well. But making sure you plan for, you know, just like the health care expenses, a possibility of a long-term care situation, because that tends to be, like I said, towards the later part of your retirement, a later part of your life, a huge expense that that people just aren't aware of. I mean, statistically, I think statistically nationwide, probably a long-term care stay is about $10,000 a month. You know, if you go into a nursing facility or need a nursing home, a nurse in your home or assisted care facility, it's quite a big expense. You know, depending on where you live, of course, but statistically, somewhere between $5,000 to $10,000 a month just for long term care for people.
Right.
So that would definitely make a huge dent into your overall retirement scenario if you don't plan accordingly to cover some of those costs early on, to make sure you have either the proper insurances or some way to take care of that that long-term care expense.
Okay. Well, I know that long-term care insurance is not a type of insurance that I personally have at the moment, but it's something that I've been thinking that I should be looking into. Now, I know with insurance, you know, if we're talking about, say, life insurance, there's kind of like different flavors. You know, you've got your your universal life insurance program. You've got your term where you pay on a annual basis, and I think with term the premium can change as you age. Whereas if you buy a whole life insurance, you might still be paying over time with it, but your premium is always a level amount. And then, of course, I think there's a kind of a life insurance policy where you can put in a big lump sum that say if you become the beneficiary of an inheritance or something like that, where you suddenly have a big chunk of money available, you might choose to put it into something like that. Does long-term care insurance also come in different flavors like that, or is it all one kind?
Generally, it's all one kind. Like I said, I mentioned kind of segments of long-term care. They're what we call standalone long-term care policies, where you would go to an insurance provider and they would give you a policy that would cover, you know, X amount of years of a long-term care stay for you. That has evolved a little bit because, you know, the premiums have increased over the years, and it's just becoming so costly for people to get these standalone policies. So people just, you know, if you don't, if you look at it, if you don't look at long-term care probably before anywhere at 55 is kind of the spot. 55 and older, some of those premiums are going to be so high that you're going to be, how am I going to cover this particular premium for that? So it tends to be a little costly if you don't put it into place earlier, prior to 55. That's why, you know, some of the other flavors that may come with long-term care is, you know, a way to provide it would be as riders on either some of those life insurance policies that you mentioned, or riders onto an annuity type product, where basically if there's a long-term care situation, the annuity may cover, you know, may pay out X amount of dollars to cover a long-term care stay in addition to some of the other features that it may have. So there's a variety of ways that people, that the insurance industry is basically taking a look at the long-term care situation, because, like I said, the premiums are becoming so costly for individual policies for people that or older than over 55, and those are the people that really need it. So how do you really afford it? So, you know, they're looking at ways to make it more affordable by moving away from some of the standalone policies. You know, you see some carriers even getting out of the industry. I know MetLife recently. They do not do long-term care anymore. Prudential is also another. So there are certain carriers that are basically kind of moving away, and some of those standalone policies are becoming inflexible. So the industry is looking at other options, and some of those other options may be riders, you know, and we'll kind of see what comes down the pike as well. But that's kind of how they're covering that is, that situation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I see that we have received some questions from some of our listeners. That's about the end of my questions. So is there anything else that we should cover before I open it up and we get some questions from our guests who are listening to us? Is there anything else that we haven't talked about?
No, I think that's it for now. We can field some questions if something else comes to my head. I'm sure I can interject, but we can take
okay.
some questions.
Okay. Well, we have a question that it doesn't say who it's from, but a person who has said that we haven't been talking about health care in retirement and transitions to retirement, options for what to do if you're not covered from 60 to 65, which is what she was hoping that we would talk about. So is there anything that we can help her with on that?
If you're not covered between 60 and 65?
That's what she said, yes.
Okay. That was what we had talked about with basically looking at getting a private insurance company, insurance on your own. So basically you need to shop around and take a look at obtaining a health care plan on your own.
Right.
And, you know, looking at what the cost would be for that. So really factoring in, like I said, what's the most important thing if you plan to retire prior to 65, if it's 60 to 65, you have 5 years of paying for private health insurance on your own. So really making sure you have the resources in order to do so. But that's basically the option that you would have there would be to obtain your own policy if you don't have access to your old employer's plan or you haven't aged into Medicare yet.
Okay. I've got a question from Jane in Baltimore. She says, is there a list of expenses besides insurance premiums for Medicare, GAP, drugs, carving out for what? Let me into your thinking, besides just saying grow a savings account for health care, savings, and retirement. She says, this is important. Could you list things or post a list here for later?
Okay. Yeah, I could probably post a list because, you know, there's a way to kind of carve out particular expenses and what they would be on there. So I would probably have to get a list together and put it out. But generally, Medicare.gov is a good site to take a look at it. They can look at projected health care expenses and kind of break it out as well on what particular categories that you would pay basically the premiums for the Part B, prescription drugs, dental, because some plans don't cover dental. So there's a variety of different categories to make sure that you're aware of. But I can definitely get that to you, Ed, and let you post it on the site so you can
okay.
The listener can take a look at that if they want something a little more detailed.
All right. Okay. How about those of you who are listening on the call? Do any of you, the lines are live, so you can just speak up and ask a question if you've got one. Who's got a question? Okay, nobody wants to talk. We had another question from Jane she had said, are you talking about long-term care insurance? But I think we did talk about long-term care insurance, so I don't know if there's anything more that we need to say about that. You've talked about the various different ways that we could acquire long-term care insurance, and it's certainly good to know that there's, it sounds like many life insurers, life insurance companies are making it available as a way that you can get a payout from your life insurance, or do you make it as a separate rider that goes on with your life insurance?
Yeah, it's generally a separate rider that goes on with the life insurance, and not a part of it. So there's ways to put it in on as a rider, and like I said, in addition to the life insurance annuities, annuity companies also certain annuity companies also provide that as a rider to put on if a long-term care event happened. This is what that particular annuity would do as well. So there's, like I said, there's ways of covering that in addition to some of the standalone policies. But I think I believe the industries are moving away from some of those standalone policies only because, like I said, the premiums are becoming much higher and people aren't able to afford it if you're over a certain age, because you do have to put it in place earlier than generally 55 for really to be affordable and to make sense for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we have a question from Helen, who says that I'm 57 and I don't have my health care program set up in front of me right now. She said, I clearly see that I am not prepared, and what can I do in the next 10 years to get myself prepared?
She said she doesn't have access to an employer plan. Is that what I'm understanding? Or
I think that's what she means, because she's saying I've not had a proper career, so I guess since she's saying she didn't have a proper career, that she probably doesn't have access to an employer plan.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's basically where you make sure that if she's able to obtain a policy on her own, making sure she has something in place right now that may continue into retirement, but then also making sure you look into those options if she does get a program in place now, if there's a health savings account available for that particular program to start saving some money towards future health care expenses in a health savings account, or, like I said, starting maybe a side account where she's putting away some money on a monthly basis that will be earmarked for health care expenses in retirement. So those are some of, you know, the ways that she can kind of get the policy in place now, look at a health savings account, and then also maybe looking at putting some money into a regular account on a monthly basis to save towards that particular goal.
Okay. I've got another question here, which is, how do we evaluate the programs that are available? I'm going to jump in here and say I don't think that you necessarily are wanting to necessarily advocate any particular program by name here at this time, although you certainly would do that if someone was a client of yours. How do we make a decision wading into the whole array of what's available? How do we start to make a decision as to which direction, which types of programs are going to work best for us?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about the Medicare programs or the Medicare Advantage programs that are available, then, you know, Medicare.gov has a whole publication that basically goes through all of the health insurance providers, and they rate them by it's a star rating. So you can basically evaluate the carriers based on their star rating. Anything that's provided in, I believe, in the Medicare.gov has to be 3 stars and above. So basically they've kind of gleaned what would be available to put into that particular program. So I don't think anybody less than that would be there. So they've done a lot of the work up front for you, looking at some of those Medicare Advantage plans as well. So, but as anything, really evaluating particular carriers is really looking at what their ratings are, A plus, if you're looking at insurance companies, if you're looking at, the Medicare Advantage plans, going to Medicare.gov and looking at the star systems to see what particular carriers, where they rate, what programs they have, how long they've been providing it, are there any complaints. They'll go through a lot of that that will help you evaluate particular programs that are available that are best for you and taking a look at it. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing kind of independent research on particular carriers, really just looking at their insurance ratings on either A+, I think it's Moody's rating, some other Standard and Poor type ratings to take a look at where the insurance carrier covers, and then also are there any complaints and how they deal with their customer service and things like that. So that's kind of the way to take a look at that.
Okay. Now, this is a question coming from me. I'm going to try to sum up what I think that you've said here today. I think what you've said is that as best as we can, it's to our advantage to stay as healthy as possible as we age, because the healthier we are, the even with chronic illnesses, that we can manage those with our doctor's care, but the healthier we are, the better, because, you know, there's always going to be a trajectory that leads toward where we're in a situation where we need long-term care or to be hospitalized or we die. But as I think you're saying, to be staying as healthy as possible, I think that you're saying to get a long-term care program in place before we get to be 55. And, there was a third one that just has flown out of my head here. What am I missing here that's crucial that you've been talking about?
Keeping your costs down low, we did that. Mm-hmm. Knowing your different options that are available so you're not overpaying on certain benefits, especially through the various Medicare programs, because there's just so much available that's out there too. You're really making sure you understand how the Medicare system works if you get into that as well, because there's, you know, a lot of different things that are available to you. I think that,
I think what you're saying is that we should work as long as possible, because as we work, we would probably be able to get some kind of program through mm-hmm. our employers.
Yes. That's exactly right as well. And a lot of people are choosing to work longer because of healthcare expenses. You know, they'll continue to work a little bit longer to stay on a spouse's program or continue themselves to work to have access to an employer program. Early retirement is definitely a good vision to have. You just really have to make sure you have the proper plan in place, because there's a lot of variables that come up with early retirement prior to 65, because the system is, you know, kind of geared towards, you know, 65 being quote unquote the normal retirement age. So anything before that, your programs don't kick in. So mm-hmm. making sure you have some things in place and what these expenses are going to be if you plan an early retirement is best, you know, before you jump mm-hmm. out. Know what's available to you through your employer, or making sure you have a private health plan in place for yourself and how much that's going to cost you if you plan to retire prior to 65. So really just having that knowledge and the plan in place to do an early retirement, because, like I said, there's a lot of variables involved. So you want to make sure healthcare expenses is one of those that you account for when you're planning for early retirement prior to 65.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, this is me again, just asking you to speculate, mm-hmm. do you think that You know, the retirement of 65, that was put into place, I think, probably in the 1930s, somewhere around there. As we're time goes forward, we're healthier, we're living longer. Do you think that there will come a time, and if so, do you see it as being like 10 years out, or do you think there'll come a time when we'll actually raise the retirement age from 65 to a higher age?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I believe that's definitely some of the talk that has been going on as, you know, they continue to talk in Congress and about the fiscal cliff and entitlement programs and how that's all going to work. And a lot of it has come down to, you know, should we raise the retirement age to 70? You know, that may alleviate some of the Social Security issues, the Medicare issues, things like that. So, you know, as we're getting older and longevity has become an issue, you know, basically 70 is the new 60, or, you know, so it's probably going to be, something that will be looked at. Because we've been dealing with the 65 age since Social Security was developed in 1935 under FDR. So I know at some point, as we're living longer and longer, that retirement age will definitely be revisited.
Okay. I suspected that it would have to, just because, you know, I've got my parents are pretty active people, and they're in their 80s, and I have a step grandfather who died last year, but he was 102. So it just seems to me that, you know, these are people that were alive in the 30s, and yet they lived that long. So for those of us that are younger, it just seems to me that the time longevity, I think, is going to really get longer, and I see that a big concern for that is, how do we stop working at 65 and still have managed to put aside enough money for the fact that we could live 40 years after that?
Yeah, that's one of the challenges. You know, it's basically looking at a statistically 20 to 30 year vacation that you're planning,
<Right.
laughs> and how do you really do that? And, you know, really, we talked about last time about the retirement income, and healthcare is definitely one of those pieces, expenses that you also have to be aware of as well. So it's definitely quite a challenge that boomers have, especially boomer women, because we live a little bit longer, will have, trying to see how we can do it all within that time frame before we retire.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I see that we're almost to the end of our hour, so before I thank you and close the call, I'm going to ask our guest listeners once more if they have any questions, because I certainly don't want to leave anybody with any questions unanswered. So I'll stop talking here for a minute and ask anybody who's on the call who would like to ask Pam a question. Please just jump in and ask your question. Okay, well, I guess, Pam, that we must have been thorough and answered the questions that everyone has, because I'm not.
Okay, or people may just be shy. You know, as always, I always open it up to, you know, if people want to discuss any particular personal questions offline, they have access to my information via the website. So
yeah,
definitely,
of course,
feel free to do that.
And let me remind, I always say at the end, but I'll say it now too, so we have it on the call twice here. They can send you an email at, your email address is pamela@jacksonsams.com. That's jacksonsams.com. And, of course, Pamela, PAMELA. So if no one else would like to jump in and ask a last-minute question, I'm going to close things up here, Pam, and say it's been, as usual, great talking to you. You've got wonderful information here, and I appreciate that you have been our guest here, and for the great discussion on life after work, creating a healthcare and retirement that will last. Well, I'm saying it wrong, but healthcare and retirement in this time. How can we make it work for us? So thanks, everyone, for joining us this evening for this great call with our guest, Pamela Sams. And if you have any questions after the call, you can email them to her, as I said, at pamela@jacksonsams.com, or you can send them to me, and I will relay them on. And I thank you very much, everyone, for your time this evening.
Okay. Thank you for having me, Ann.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.